So it turns out that, you know, he's not actually dead. And the whole time that he's been laying there, he's alive. And just when you think the guy is actually going to crawl out and he's going to get out of the room and he's going to survive, the dead guy gets up and just locks the door.
Did you do this one before?
No. I've only just seen it.
I'm having some really, really crazy deja vu right now.
Okay, that's weird.
Does that mean there's a glitch in the Matrix?
I'm hoping that means that this is going to be a good episode.
Well, if I'm having deja vu about good things, I don't know. Is that a good thing? Do you know what? I didn't even know what movie you're talking about.
It was a good movie.
I don't even know what movie you're talking about. So actually, I don't know. Does that mean that worked? I'm not sure. I'm confused. I'm also John Brown. He's Paul Marsh. And welcome to We're Gonna Need a Bigger Pod.
Hello, hello, hello.
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 Yes, we're going to need a bigger pod.
Up and down. Up and down. I'm not saying that again. I'm not paying for it. Right.
We've got some good things to talk
about,
haven't we?
That's quite a lot. How are you? I know, I'm like a rabbit in the headlights. I'm like, oh, we're doing this again. Amazing. Because we've been quite busy. You've probably noticed an absence of certain episodes. And the reason for that is because Paul and I have been busy with Scoreheads. Now, of course, anyone that listens to Scoreheads, and thank you very much to everyone for their support, including James Gunn.
Which is
quite amazing, yeah. Thank you very much to those of you that have shown your support for Scoreheads, which is our other podcast with Sean Wilson. Although I will say we three have been busy because Paul is actually an executive producer of Scoreheads, so he's been just as busy with Scoreheads as Sean and I have. He's just been busy off mic with it, if that makes sense. So yeah, we've been very busy with that, getting that up and running, and it's going very, very well. An incredible amount of support for Scoreheads, and we're very grateful for it. So thank you very much for that from me, Sean and Paul. Sean Paul!
He's a lovely guy, by the way.
Yeah, I know you know him, don't you?
I wouldn't say I know him. I've spent time with him.
You partied with him in Los Angeles. Yeah. That's a very cool campfire story. So not quite ready to tell the kids that yet.
No.
Because of the things that went on. Anyway, so yeah, that's a thing that happened as well. But also, yeah, so we've been really busy with that. Thank you so much for everyone's support on that. But we are back with We're Gonna Need a Bigger Pod. It's not a momentary one that we just brought out of nowhere because we felt like it. These are back to weekly because now we've got the other one set up. We've pretty much got there now with the system, haven't we? I think we're about there. So you will get, if you like the pod, if you like films, you're going to get this every week. If you like film music, you're going to get that every week. And if you like a bit of both, then, well, it's Christmas, isn't
it? There you go.
There you go. There we go. Okay. If you want to follow us around, we will put out a restraining order. No, seriously, at John Brown TV, at JON, at John Brown TV on all socials. You are?
At Paul Swampy Marsh on all socials.
There you go. And this is the film podcast that is famous for getting people's names wrong, and I'm sure we'll do that again along the course.
It's literally a matter of time, isn't it?
But we're having a bit of a catch-up on this one. So this is slightly leaner than usual because time and stuff, but we've kind of compounded some stuff that's going on over the last couple of weeks and stuff that's going on this week to kind of bring you together this one compendium of cool stuff that's around at the moment that we really enjoyed. So it's slightly leaner than you're used to, but I think we kind of cut back the fat and just focused on the good stuff, which is where we're going at.
Yeah, the two things that we're going to focus on this week are literally complete opposite ends of the spectrum. Two brilliant movies. One that is such a big movie, it's not even a movie, it's an event.
Yeah.
It's bigger than a movie. It's unbelievable. And then at the other end of the scale, you've got a movie, an independent movie that's so small, a lot of people probably wouldn't have heard of it, yet it is equally as amazing. So we're going to shout from the rooftops about how good it actually is.
Yeah, we are. We're going to do that. Also, we'll recap on Guardians Volume 3 for anyone that missed that, because we talked about it a lot on the radio, but I don't think we've talked about it here. Well, we talked about it in Scoreheads, obviously, with great John Murphy on to talk about that, but I don't think we've really talked in depth on this podcast about the movie, so we'll catch up on that shortly as well. So yeah, we've got some interesting stuff that just broke in the news. We've got the biggest trailer of the week, and actually two big trailers, because the other one came out of nowhere and I was like, oh, I'm totally here for this. There's also that coming up as well. We've got some film reviews, we're looking at Blu-rays, DVDs, 4K, etc. Little look at streaming for you as well. Plus we've got a big interview which you've done, which was amazing.
Yeah.
With
Mr. Neil Linpow.
Yeah, he's writer, actor.
Yeah, everything. You might not know who he is. You might not know who he is yet. I still didn't get it, did I? But you will soon, because not only is he a great actor, but he's a fantastic writer as well. And I think this is going to be his springboard.
And a great guest as well. I heard it earlier.
Very good.
Very cool. So, yeah, he's on the show. So, yeah, let's kick it off. Let's start with breaking news. At the time of recording, this was breaking news.
So, Eddie Murphy is in talks to start in a new Pink Panther movie.
Okay, what do we know about this?
Nothing. We just know that he's in talks to star in a new Pink Panther movie, and I'll be honest with you, I'm all in on that. I
remember the OG ones.
Yeah, of course we all do, but...
That famous theme as well.
I think that Eddie Murphy has gone through so many highs and lows in his career, but ultimately he's so talented, both as an actor and as a comedian... This kind of seems like it could be, if it's well written, please be well written. It could be his perfect vessel.
Do-dum, do-dum.
Bo-dum, bo-dum.
Yes, I like the idea. If it's one of those things that it will either be phenomenally good
or.
Because there are some questionable entries in the Pink Panther franchise.
There are mostly questionable entries.
Yeah, but then again, you know, that's a franchise that has its tongue firmly. Is it a franchise? I guess it is.
Yeah.
With its tongue firmly in its cheek anyway. So it's just some are better than others.
Yeah.
Same could be said for Fast, to be honest. Well, but we'll get
maybe,
to that.
Maybe, yeah.
So do we know anything other than that's it? Just that he's in talks to do it? Do we know who's directing it? Do we know who's writing it?
We had issues and I had to take Eddie Murphy off of my speed dial on my phone. So, no, that's all the information I've got at the moment.
Okay. You can't ask, like, one of your other famous mates.
What, like Sean Paul? Ask him if he knows what's going on with the new Eddie Murphy movie.
Does he know Eddie Murphy?
Probably, I don't know.
Went to the party, man. Like,
yeah, I know, but Eddie Murphy wasn't there. It was an LL Cool J party, not an Eddie Murphy party.
Oh, right. Cool.
Yeah, Jay.
Oh, no. No, keep your dad jokes over there, please.
So that's something just to keep an eye on, really.
Yeah, that literally just happened as we came in to sit down. So we thought, oh, we'll run with that, because that'll be nice and fresh by the time we release this later. So, yeah, that's Eddie Murphy in talks to do a Pink Panther movie, which means whether or not he agrees or they agree to him, we're still getting a new Pink Panther movie. I'm trying not to... So, yeah, that's in the works. Right, we'll move on to trailers, because, like I said, we're
something that we do know that is definitely happening is Indiana Jones.
Oh, yes.
Four Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Because there are four Indiana Jones films, and they are all coming to Disney Plus.
Why do you have an issue with that? I don't have an issue with that at all. I quite like them all for different reasons. Yes, all four. So, because Disney now have... Well, I guess because they bought Lucasfilm in like 2015 or whatever. But so now Disney has dominion over Indiana Jones, of course. They are releasing The Dial of Destiny.
So excited.
June 28th, I think that's coming.
So excited.
So in anticipation...
25th. It's my wife's birthday.
Oh, yeah, of course. This is the day before mine.
Yeah.
Well, now it says 28th, I think, in some of the other...
Or was it changed?
I think it might have, yeah.
Ooh,
do you know what I have? Right, can I just do this? It's terribly unprofessional to do this while we're recording. But I will say that
the Indiana Jones 4 films are coming to Disney Plus on May 31st.
They are. Oh, it's not going to be in here, is it? I'm going to press this and it's going to go no. Oh, no, it is. It's here. There we go. It's amazing. I'm glad we're not live. There we go. Yeah, Wednesday the 31st of May will be Indiana Jones Day. On Disney Plus, you will be able to see the existing four films in the franchise. There are four films on the streaming service ahead of the release of the fifth and final film, which lands in UK cinemas from June 28th. So it is June 28th.
So has that gone back then?
Only about a couple of days.
Because it was due to be... I'm pretty sure my wife's birthday is the Thursday, the 25th. So I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm on the 26th.
Okay.
Oh, wait, that's a Sunday.
That's what I mean. That's why I found that very strange.
That's interesting. Shall we have a look at the calendar? Again, this makes for brilliant radio.
Talk amongst yourselves. We'll be back in a second.
Yeah, that's interesting. No, because I've just got that through now.
So 25th is a Sunday. 28th is the Wednesday.
This podcast was built a lot around, oh, well, there's all these things happening. Should we just run in the studio and make one?
Yeah.
So this is why it's very thrown together.
Yeah.
So 28th is Wednesday.
Okay, well, that makes a lot
of sense. Is it Wednesday? Well, you just looked.
No, 25th is a Sunday. 28th is a Wednesday.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, Wednesdays are a good day for movies. Yeah, so, okay, Wednesday the 28th is the day that Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny drops in cinemas. We'll have more on that as we get closer to it. But in the meanwhile, yes, you can see all four films, assuming they're going to be running in glorious 4K, if you have that kind of Disney Plus account, on Wednesday the 31st of May, which Disney Plus have dubbed Indiana Jones Day. So there you go. That's fresh. That's also fresh today. So
that'll definitely be Indiana Jones Day in our house because we love Indiana Jones.
Oh, so for sure.
It could absolutely be. I'm not sure if it'll be a quadruple bill, but it definitely could be a triple bill.
I watch them all the time, so...
I don't have the stamina that I used to.
I'll probably watch them ahead of that because I won't be able to wait till then. It's amazing, isn't it, how old those films are, and yet I'm saying I can't wait for the third. Because that's the quality of the film. That gives you a lot of clue about the quality. If you've never seen an Indiana Jones movie before and you are a Disney Plus subscriber, now's your chance.
Oh, then you've never lived.
That's not kind, is it?
But true.
It's not kind. If you ever just thought, you know what, I don't know about that. But now all the hype surrounding the other movies coming. So you're like, do you know what? I might actually watch those after all. You're a Disney Plus subscriber. You're about to witness something amazing for the very first time. I'm quite jealous, actually.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So there we go. That Indiana Jones Day is 31st of May. You can watch the first four films on Disney Plus with the fifth and final installment. Harrison Ford says it is. So it is on the 28th of June in UK cinemas. Right. Trailer. We had a big trailer this week. Yeah. We had two big trailers this week.
Yeah, so one updated trailer and one brand new one. So we'll go with the brand new one first. I had no idea about this film, didn't know anything about it whatsoever until you told me about this.
Gareth.
And wow. So we're talking about The Creator with John David Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's John David Washington.
It's John David Washington, yeah.
We are the podcast that gets people's names wrong.
It could be Washington David John, I'm not sure.
No, well, his surname is Washington.
Yeah. But it looks very good. So very, very briefly, set in the future, AI has got into such an advanced stage that man has created an AI that has kind of taken over and created a new super race of AI. And us humans are about to go to war with these AI robot type semi-humanoid things.
Very Terminator.
It looks...
However.
So good.
Gareth... Edwards.
But Mr. Gareth
Edwards.
That's
Rogue One. Yeah.
Okay. What I have seen in your trailer so far looks phenomenal. Very excited.
10 years ago today, the artificial intelligence created to protect us detonated a nuclear warhead in Los Angeles. For as long as AI is a threat, we will never stop hunting them. This is a fight for our very existence.
Whatever's in there, they're sure worried about someone getting in.
Yeah, we're getting out.
Heaven, because you're not good, and I'm not a person.
So Gareth Edwards is the director.
Yes.
Right. I always get Gareth Evans and Gareth Edwards confused. Both very, very talented men, and both made incredible films. But Gareth Edwards is the director of Creator. Gareth Edwards, of course, directed Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, which was phenomenal.
Yeah,
probably one of the best entries in the new canon,
yes,
for sure.
Yeah.
So, Yes, I'm. Either way, I'm sold. Because to be honest, it would have been either of those guys I was sold, because their work is exemplary. So yeah, I'm all in.
We've got a little while to wait on that one. That's not out until September 29th.
Yeah, that will be later this year, but obviously this campaign starts here for Creator, and I think they're shopping it around.
It looks
festivals.
Kind of Star Wars-ish.
Yeah, but cast.
Not a million miles away from Star
cast.
Wars.
Cast, director, visually very pleasing. I'm excited for
it's
it.
It's got our mate Ralph Ineson.
Ralph Ineson.
Ineson, I always get that wrong, don't I? There we go, yes, the podcast.
That's the guess people's names wrong. Well, I got his name right when I spoke to him, which is a really good thing.
Oh, but that's always handy.
There's always that.
But like you say, I mean, even down to Alison Janney's in this. Fantastic. Love Alison Janney.
Yeah, this would be great.
It's like country singer Sturgill Simpson.
I think it would be
random.
Great. There are some movies you can look at a trailer and you just know. And this is one of those times. Yeah, very much looking forward to that. That's September 29th. And then the other trailer was Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Oh.
This is the full trailer.
Oh.
Our lives are the sum of our choices. And we cannot escape the past. Ethan? This mission of yours is gonna cost you dearly.
The world is changing. Truth is vanishing. War is coming.
It's been a long time, friend. You've no idea the power I represent. It knows your story and how it ends.
Listen to me. The world's coming after you.
His fate is written. Shall we write yours too?
If anything happens to them, there's no place that I won't go to kill you. That is written.
Ethan, what's your objective? What's your ultimate objective?
Your life will always matter more to me than my own.
None of our lives can matter more than this mission.
I don't accept that.
Epic. Just the trailer on its own is epic.
The first part of two, of course, that's indicated in the title, not a spoiler. This is, of course, the follow-up to Fallout, which, for my money, was the best Mission Impossible movie in the series so far. Christopher McQuarrie and Tom Cruise's partnership on these films have elevated them to another level. And not just, Chris is amazing. McHugh is amazing as a director, as a writer. He wrote Usual Suspects. He's incredible. His work with Tom, as I say, I think has elevated this to a stratospheric level. Behind the scenes, there's so many great, talented people, from VFX artists to composer Lorne Balfe's coming back for this one. Lorne scored the trailers as well.
Just amazing. I listened to the score over the trailer, and I love it when they make it so that you get the Mission Impossible tune in there.
Yeah,
but it's just turned up to 11.
Yeah, and that's what Lorne does. We know, Lorne's been on before. He'll be back for. He assures me he's back to do a mission special later this year. So we'll expect that towards the summer on this very channel. We'll talk more about that. But yeah, I mean, Eddie Hamilton, the editor, incredible editor. It's just, and the cast, we've got returning cast. We've got Rebecca Ferguson, of course, Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames. We've got Hayley Atwell's joining the cast for this one. There's a lot going on in this movie. I mean, the best thing to do is watch the trailer. Like, yeah, I don't think
there's nothing
we can say that the trailer does not already say better than we ever could. Like, it's such a, well, as you're right, it's a very well put together trailer. It's like, that's how you sell an action movie, a summer blockbuster. That's how you sell a summer blockbuster. Everything is here. It's got real first one vibes as well. Vibes around, like, gave me real first vibes from the first movie, to the point there are a couple of shots in there that are very much hat tips to the very first movie. Without spoiling anything. So yeah, like, I'm all here for it. Like, everybody knows that. Anyone knows me knows I'm always here for a Mission Impossible movie. So I'm all for it. Check the trailer out. It's online right now. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. That comes to cinemas in July. You're expecting that in July. So yeah, all for it. More of that, please.
Out in cinemas at the moment are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Yes, indeed. That's new.
Beau Is Afraid.
Beau Is Afraid is doing very, very well. Now, Beau Is Afraid is from Ari Aster, who brought us Hereditary and Midsommar.
Midsommar.
Now, thank you for kicking my foot.
Oh, was that your foot? Sorry, I thought it was the desk leg.
I thought, are you trying to tell me something?
I thought it was playing footsie with the desk leg. It's you.
Tell me something. So I don't judge. I know I'm a stunning man. Beau Is Afraid, by the way, I should say, is also in cinemas now. Do go and check it out. It is delightfully out there.
Yes.
It's 3 hours long though, by the way, just so you know. So
get comfy.
But yeah. what a ride. Okay, yeah, Beau Is Afraid in cinemas now. Coming up next,
Going to something that's been out a couple of weeks now, but we really wanted to talk about it because we haven't had the chance yet, is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yeah, so just to summarise, because I think we talked about it a lot.
We spoke about it on the radio.
We've done a lot of press on this. But I mean, in a nutshell, going back to some previous conversations we had about whether or not it was going to be a 5, it is a 5. I think. So this is James Gunn's last chapter in this particular franchise. That's not to say it will be the last chapter in the Guardians canon, because the Guardians of the Galaxy comics go on forevermore. So there is an opportunity for someone else to come and pick up the torch and carry that on. But for now, this is the closing chapter in the arc that James Gunn created, and very well he did that too. And so what we essentially have is, on the one hand, we've got a movie that closes all of the story threads and ties them all up quite nicely. Just not just from Guardians Volume 1 and Volume 2, but from things like Avengers and Infinity War and Endgame and Thor Love and Thunder and all these other... the Guardians Holiday Special, that's in play as well. So it ties all this up very beautifully, I must say. And gives us that on the one hand, but also Rocket's origin story. It's interesting that in the closing chapter of a franchise, you've also got an origin story of one of the characters.
Yeah.
However, manages it very well, I must say. And aside from everything that you come to expect from a movie of this nature, and even of a James Gunn movie, to be honest, what you get is not what you would expect. This movie is much darker in tone than the previous two. Much darker. I mean, don't get me wrong, the humour is still there, the intergalactic adventures are still there, the eye-popping visuals, the you know, we talk about the roller coaster ride, the cinematic event effect, especially in 3D. That's all there. You know, this is James Gunn. James Gunn said himself, this is his Star Wars. You can see that. That's all very much in play. However, aside from that, we also get Origins Rocket story, and we get this horrifying and very, very upsetting and traumatising undercurrent going on about animal cruelty and Rocket's origin, and you get to the guts of why Rocket is as grisly and as angry as he is, and when you find out, you get it. Like, do you know what I mean?
So
like,
I think that
you totally understand.
I think that when you have a franchise as Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously part of the Marvel universe, I think that when you're going to potentially end a story. There are various different ways you could go around it, and you could make it a nice, fluffy, happy ending for everybody. Okay, lots of people do that, and there's nothing wrong with that, and that's absolutely fine. Or I think that you could really give the fans something that have completely invested in this and take them back to something and make it real.
Yeah, and there's like I said, the thing I keep coming back around to is about the... And again, this is all in the... Not just James's writing, but this is all in the source material. Like, this is how Rocket began. This isn't something James Gunn made up. Like, this is... There are certain moments in the movie that are almost frame perfect to the comic. Like, he's so dedicated. He's so committed to getting this right. And, of course, he puts his own spin on things, as any director should. But this is just heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking, Rocket's origin story. So it's a really interesting place to go when you're in your final act, because you've got three acts of the final act, but actually the first act really deals with why. And the setup of that, of course, is that the opening, literal opening of the movie is Rocket getting injured by another character that comes in, which obviously, again, for anyone that hasn't seen, I won't spoil it, but there is a bit of a battle, and then Rocket gets seriously injured. And what happens is, essentially, because he is cybergenetically modified, for want of a better description, they can't use whatever their current, whether that be futuristic, but they can't use whatever their normal procedure would be to fix him, right? Med packs or med belts or whatever. They can't fix him on their own because he's been modified and set up and built a certain way that only one person would know the answer to that. And so that sets us off on a course of the Guardians getting together as a family and saying, okay, we need to save our friend. And that's where the movie jumped. That's the jumping off point for the movie. But what we get from that is, while Rocket is in a coma, he's flashing back to how he got here. And so the movie works on two levels. We've got an adventure story about the coming together of family, but also the ending of a chapter, whilst at the same time, we're learning how Rocket even got to be in this place in the first place. And that brings us to the High Evolutionary, who is by far and away the best Marvel villain in a long time.
That's a big statement.
Your friend once took advantage. I learned my lessons. I aimed some small part of my mental capacity back in my own direction, and now gravity itself serves my whims. You must find Counter-Earth familiar.
Counter-Earth?
I visited your planet many years ago.
Earth hasn't been my planet in a long time.
Your people had wonderful spirit. The art and music and literature were some of the finest in the universe. Earth would be a fabulous place were it not for the ignorance and bigotry.
Okay.
It inspired me to create Counter-Earth.
I don't care.
All of the good and none of the bad.
I don't need another speech by some impotent whack job whose mother didn't love him, rationalizing why he needs to conquer the universe.
I'm not trying to conquer the universe. I'm perfecting it.
So yeah, all these things considered, it is incredible. What a way to go out. Like, he did not mess around. This was his last one for Disney/Marvel, because obviously we know he's now gone on to be the head of DC Films with his good friend Peter Safran. And he left it in a better place than he found it. It is arguably the best MCU entry in a while. Like, it's got that big Avengers feel to it, and the heartbreak as well, and the sense of loss and tragedy, and that's all in there. But also, let's not forget, although it is darker in tone, it is balanced with that levity that we've come to expect, the camaraderie and the comedy that we've come to expect from the characters. And again, no expense spared. You know, from the visual effects, a lot of the effects are practical. Obviously, in a movie like that, they can't be all practical.
No.
But the CGI is very well done. And great performances, great cast. Of course, the cast is all back together. Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Karen Gillan, Pom Clementif. Again, I'm apologising because we're the podcast that gets the names wrong. Yeah, and of course, Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper as Rocket. And of course, Bradley Cooper has way, way more to do characteristically this time in terms of his voice acting. But Sean Gunn, James's brother, is in this movie as well.
Okay.
As one of the Ravagers, but also... who is now a Guardian, but he's also motion capture for Rocket. So he does a lot of work there, and he also does the voice of young Rocket. So Sean Gunn is more involved than we see on screen. Yeah, so there's a lot. I won't go too much further into it because I don't want to spoil any sort of cameos and people appearing and stuff, but it's got massive cars. It's very well done. I think it's a great way. He's gone out with a bang and not left anything to chance, and it really lifts the film for it. So yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, that's around now. If you still haven't seen it yet, 3D, 2D, and in IMAX, 5 stars. Yeah, we're going to set on 5 for that. Definitely.
Talking of a big event film, they don't come much bigger than this one, do they?
No, they don't.
They
and
don't
just
come
to...
much bigger than this.
We went through that whole thing and I didn't once mention the fact that John Murphy's music is some of the best in his career.
Yes. Yes. We should mention that. Really,
it's a magnum opus for John, definitely. If you want to know more about that, though, that's same channel. Stay with this channel. You'll find it under the Scoreheads Presents. John Murphy talking about his music, Guardians Volume 3. You can hear that right now. Thank you again to John for giving us a brilliant, brilliant episode. And also thanks to James Gunn himself for his support on that as well. Okay, let's move on to another event. Like you quite rightly just highlighted, it is an event.
Fast 10.
Fast 10, affectionately nicknamed Fast X. Roman numerals, of course, means it is called Fast 10. We talked about this on the radio earlier today, and we were both laughing about the fact that someone missed a trick by not calling it Fast 10 Your Seatbelts.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it literally, you know, there's so many different ways you could have done it with the 1, the 0, and then the EN Your Seatbelts.
Yeah, you're hyped for this. So I've seen it, you haven't. At the time of recording, I've seen it, you haven't. So you are very hyped for it. I think your hype is well invested.
So I've seen all of the films. I love all of the films. They're all great. They're all popcorn, turn your brain off at the door and just sit back and enjoy them.
Do you take your brain out
and
just leave it outside?
Yeah, I asked the ladies to look after it. And, you know when you leave the cinema and they're kind of stood there with the bags helping people look at their rubbish in it, my brain is on a side section. I go, thank you very much. And I pop it back.
Well, the thing is, while you're explaining that to me, I have this vision of just piles of brains outside the door. It's like
a zombie's heaven.
I know, right? I was about to say it's like a zombie banquet. Like, yeah. Just don't show Fast X and Dawn of the Dead in the same afternoon, man. Seriously. Yeah. But I mean, to be honest, they're not brain dead.
They're just fun, silly.
They
films.
Are, right? And that's why I said your hype is well invested, because it is. If you're still with this franchise at this point...
Oh, right, yeah.
...and you're hyped for the next instalment, you are invested and you are a fan, right?
100%.
So you know that there are... And we'll walk through this again. I know we did this on the radio because ultimately, if you're listening to this, you probably didn't hear it on the radio. So we'll go back over a few things that we said earlier, which I think are important. Just to get to the movie, though, itself, of course. So this is set... this is a sequel to Fast 9, to answer your earlier question. It is set a couple of years after... So I guess in real time, it is a couple of years since Fast 9, so it's a couple of years in Dom's story and, of course, the family that we talk about, not all of them being blood relatives. His family is extended, very much so, by his crew. They are still on the right side of the law now, I think.
It's always questionable,
yeah, they
isn't
kind
it?
Of,
they bend
yeah,
the right side of the
they
law.
They are,
very,
because
yeah.
they started as street racers / criminals. We laughed a lot earlier about
boosting
DVD
players. Fantastic.
They're not going to be funny to me.
I wonder how many people in the real world have gone from boosting DVD players to, you know, working for the CIA, etc.
But as we said... Show me the age of a franchise without showing me the age of a franchise. They were boosting DVD players. So yeah, well, it wasn't just that, was it? I mean,
they got to
higher climbs, didn't they? Yeah. I mean, quite literally higher climbs, but for millions of dollars and so on and so forth. And it got more ludicrous as it went along, which is the point. But
I almost did that earlier when you said about Roman numerals.
Oh, it's very much Rome's movie. I mean, I think Rome would like to think that it's always his movie. But yeah, but again, this highlights how great the characters are.
Yeah.
That we joke about those characters. But yeah, so this is finding us in present day, I guess, for want of a better description, and Dom is working on... he's actually very settled at the moment. There's the family is kind of in a good place, and they are doing odd jobs for the CIA, which puts them off the watch list and puts them on the right side of the law, and so on and so forth. However, 10 years ago, in Fast 5, so this is essentially a direct sequel to Fast 5, of course, they rather spectacularly... stole a safe A vault. They Paul Walker, rest his soul, and Vin Diesel's characters drove a vault down a highway. Well, no, through the streets of Brazil first. And then across a highway, and that was quite a spectacular moment. Yeah. One of the series highlights, to be honest.
Fantastic.
Fast Five is still one of my, I would say, and Tokyo Drift are my favourites. Anyway, so this directly continues on from Fast Five in that 10 years later, the son of the big bad in Fast Five, who was, of course, spoiler alert for anyone that, this was 11 years ago, didn't see Fast Five, was dispatched spectacularly at the end of the movie.
I think we can all, it's all safe to assume that at some point the baddie meets his demise in the vast majority of films. Yeah.
What we didn't know, however, was that he had a son. And his son, Dante, played here by Jason Momoa, has waited 10 long years to exact his revenge. And as they say, revenge is a dish best served cold. So 10 years. And he has now decided that not only is he going to exact his revenge for all the pain and suffering that was caused by not only the loss of his father, but the loss of his fortune. Remember that time with the vault? He's going to exact slow and painful revenge upon Dom and his family and his team. Not by death, because as the movie's motto, and his father's motto throughout the series has been, why pay with death when suffering is owed. So he doesn't want to kill them all. Not yet. He's going to play with them first. It's like a cat with a wall, you know? So he rather cleverly sets up a series of events on a global level to not only cause them severe distress, but stitch them up massively by framing them. It's like a domino effect, framing them for a ton of things that put them on the radar of every intelligence agency in the world as the bad guys again. And thus is our setup for the film.
You remember my father?
Hernan Reyes. My father was a horrible man. Very bad daddy. But I kind of liked him, and you took him from me when you stole our money and left us with nothing but suffering.
Well, that's what I came here for. To end that suffering.
Oh, and I didn't take that money.
I burned it.
Jason Momoa steals this film away from everybody. That's the first thing I'm going to say.
He's got that personality, hasn't he?
He's Joker-like.
So,
it's Joker, you know, in that crazy, psychotic, devil-may-care.
Can I ask a question? And obviously, if this, I don't know, and if this spoils anything, please don't answer it. Does he have anything to do with Cypher, a.k.a. Charlize Theron? Because she's in this, isn't she?
She is in this, yes. I won't go into that.
Right, okay.
I think that's best left for you to discover. Obviously, they will cross paths in the movie. You can see that in the trailer. Charlize Theron returns as Cypher. I mean, I don't want to go too much into who's in it, because I don't know who's in it. I do know who's in it, but I don't know who's meant to be in it and who isn't meant to be in it.
Who do we know about?
Who was in the trailer and who... Because now I've seen the movie, I can't remember who's in the trailer and who isn't. So I won't go into who is in it, other than, of course, the cast members that you expect.
Yeah.
Michelle Rodriguez, Vin Diesel, they're in this. Paul Walker is, of course, referenced in... Because this references Fast Five, it's a sequel to Fast Five, we do get flashbacks to Fast Five, which is a really lovely way to
keep
Paul in the movie. Yeah, so in the franchise. So that's a lovely thing to see. And also, Jordana Brewster's in this movie, of course. And we've got Sung Kang. Is it Sung Kang?
Sung Kang Ho.
Sung Kang Ho, thank you. He's,
I believe,
in the movie also.
No, you're right. It is just Sung Kang.
Sung Kang.
Yeah.
Podcast that gets people's names wrong.
Thinking of,
Tyrese Gibson, Ludacris, Chris Bridges.
Natalie Emmanuel.
They're all in there. I think I can say that out loud. John Cena, of course, because he's now in it.
And Dom's brother.
So... Yeah, so they're all in there. Have I forgotten anybody at this point?
I honestly don't know. You named about 15.
There's so many now. There's so many. But again, I'm being cautious because there are some people that will show up, of course, that we don't want to. But you had a checklist. This was really good. You did this on the radio earlier. I want to do this again because you had a checklist. And it was absolutely
you're going to put me under pressure now. I won't remember.
But it was note perfect. Like I said to you about what... And we were talking about the critical of... like. there are kind of two strands that you can sit on this on. You can be very critical about this movie, or you can look at it from the perspective of a fan. And we said about, you almost have to split yourself into, it's almost like I have to split myself into two people, because on the one hand, there are a lot of things I could find wrong with it from a critical perspective. But on the other hand, I'm a fan and I take it for what it is. But we talked about a checklist of things that one expects.
What do you expect from a Fast and Furious
so
movie?
So what's your checklist? That's what we talked about earlier.
I can't remember what I said earlier.
You nailed it.
I know
earlier,
I did earlier, yeah. So you expect fast-moving cars that literally wreck a city block.
Yes, check.
A new baddie.
Check.
An old character to reappear that you weren't expecting.
That's the one I didn't answer. You see what you did there? You tried to do that to me twice today and it still haven't caught me out.
You expect Dom to talk about family a lot.
Oh yeah, don't play a drinking game on that one.
Yeah. And I mentioned two or three others and I can't think what they were now. You've put me under pressure.
I mean, there's a whole thing about, you know,
but it ticks a lot.
The villain
of
ends up being a friend and all that kind of stuff. So
it ticks
there
a lot of boxes very nicely.
What we didn't touch upon earlier actually is how actually there are things. So it does all the things you expect it to do, because I think at this point they are fully aware that they have a built-in audience that will expect these things. Yes. And this is it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario, because if they don't do that, I think at this point them trying to be very serious about it, I know Vin is very serious about it, and as he should be, but if you get too serious about it, I think it'll be a massive swing in the wrong direction. So you're not going to win certain critics over, for example.
I think the thing is, at this stage in the game, they're not really going to attract too many new fans.
No, I think, and this is the thing, this is why these movies work. Some are better than others, but this is why these movies work, is because each time, rather like Mission Impossible, although Mission Impossible takes itself a little bit more seriously, this just goes, okay, how can we go even more insane?
So
how many laws of physics can we break this time? How many laws of gravity can we break this time? And also, while we're breaking the laws of physics, while we're breaking the laws of gravity, while we're being as nonsensical as possible, we'll also, in the script, have our characters reference the fact that we defy the laws of gravity. We defy. I won't ruin it, but there are some great moments in there where characters in the movie are fully aware of the fact that they defy gravity, they defy the laws of physics, they defy. They're all immortal, apparently. So,
Tyrese brings that up in the last film, doesn't he?
Like Sharknado, these films fully lean into themselves. Yeah. I've got a lot of time and respect for something that is aware of how silly it is aware of how gung-ho it is, aware of how fully, fully over the top it is, and it says to itself, well, like I said to you earlier, if a T-Rex and Optimus Prime from Transformers turned up to join Dom in the fight, I'd be like, yeah, I'm in, man. I'm in for this. Because that's what I want from this.
Yeah.
I go to the cinema for this franchise because I want ridiculousness.
Craziness.
And I want it to be over the top. Yes, I want cheesy one-liners. I want those. I want all these characters. Because it is, like we said before about things like wrestling, you know, the WWE and the AEW and all that kind of stuff, and the insanity of it all, but it's also quite funny and it's very entertaining. That's what this is.
That was the main word you just used, entertainment.
It's very entertaining, and they just go, I know, as soon as I sat down and I sat with Ruben, I said, this is just going to be off the scale, because every time they do one of these, they go, okay, how much further? Last time they went to space! Like this, and that's the thing. They go, it's not, if you're sitting there going, oh, not another one, these aren't for you. Like, you need to be going, oh, this is the thing I said to you at the time. I can, because, all right, yeah, okay. Are there, yes, it has its problems in terms of, like, sometimes some of the script is written, and I said this to you before about how they call things out that you can see yourself. Like, it's like they're over exposition in terms of, you can see that there's a timer on a bomb about to run out, and they go, the timer's about to run out! And you're like, no, I can see that.
I have eyes.
Or like, I'm locked in the car and I can't get out. It's like, well, no, because you just pulled the... Anyway, so like, yeah, I kind of feel like there's a bit of a niggle in terms of, do they need to explain this to us as if we're children? I don't know, man. Is this movie franchise now aimed at children? Like, we're getting older. But anyway, okay. And yeah, there's some CGI that's like, really? But, and there are some one-liners, and there are some absolute one-liners. Do you know what? I'm so tempted to watch this with you when you watch it, because I'm waiting for you to go, come on! But despite all that, I couldn't take my eyes off it. And someone looked around. I didn't know about the trilogy. I thought there was another one. I didn't realise there was another two.
There was supposed to be two, and then yeah. I think they saw this one and went, yeah, you need to make another couple.
Yeah, because I can see how they've got there. Again, that's in the movie. I'll let you figure that out when you see it. But I know what the middle one's more or less going to be, and then I know there's an ending. But nonetheless, I went, there's going to be two more. And I just went, okay.
Yeah, happy with that.
Yeah, and I got to the end of this one, and I went, yeah, I'll have the next one now. Like, yes. I was into it, because it's crazy. It's a wild, insane, funny, heroic, over the top, big, loud rush, and I'm all here for it.
So, what are you thinking? What rating are we going with?
As I said to you earlier, I think somewhere between a 3 and a 4 is very fair. I was kind of hovering around a 3.5 out of 5, but I'm going to lean into a 4. Because it entertained me so much.
Yeah.
And that's the point, isn't it?
Happy with that.
There we go. Fast X. That's in cinemas now. You see it in IMAX. See it in IMAX, because you will appreciate it in IMAX. But, I mean, see it any way you can, to be honest. But yeah, Fast X, that's out now.
Right, so we're going to look at streaming, a few films that are coming to streaming. We have got Maybe I Do, which is out on Amazon Prime Video. We have got The White Men Can't Jump remake out on Disney.
I'm holding my thoughts on that till we've watched it.
Me too. However, I have seen some good early reviews, but I'm with you on that one. The original is such a classic that, yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
There's too many white guys. We need to go back to the east side where they won't see you coming.
The race is dated, bro. Everybody but you knows white dudes can hoop now.
I'll find some marks, get in their heads, throw them off their game, and we'll clean up.
I'm great at spotting mental weakness in hoopers, bro. I'm like the P.T. Anderson of basketball psychological warfare.
Who is P.T. Anderson?
Our greatest living director.
Spike Lee is our greatest living director.
Spike Lee's not even a good Knicks fan.
I knew this was a mistake.
We agreed to be nice.
Yes.
So let's reserve any feedback until we've watched it. I think that's our homework.
I will absolutely watch it with open eyes.
Yeah, let's watch it. Because, like you said, we say this about everything. We haven't seen it yet.
No.
So, yeah, let's watch it. But that is under... You watch it too. Let us know. @ Need a Bigger Pod. Tell us. Come and... if you see it before us, tweet us. Tell us. Let us know what it's about. And if you have any comments or feedback on this or anything we've talked about so far, @ Need a Bigger Pod, and we will read them out.
Also dropping on streaming is Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. That's coming to Disney Plus.
That is now on Disney Plus, actually. If you want to know more about that, I don't think we really need to go into that too much here, do we? Just jump back to our first episode. We do a massive deep dive on Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. You can find out all about that on this very channel. Our very, very first episode was all about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
You can get
all the information you should ever need from that first episode. But we will say this, it is out now on Disney Plus. It's coming to 4K, Blu-ray and DVD next week. I'm quite interested in the features in that, so I'll report back as and when.
And also Scream 6 is coming to Paramount Plus.
Again, another one we've done a deep dive on. We didn't.
We didn't
do a spoiler dive.
We didn't
dive.
Do a deep dive, because every time I went to talk about something, you told me to stop talking.
No.
It was a spoiler.
Did that thing because you saw it before anyone else, so you were really, really overexcited about it, and you were like, oh, I can't do that. And I was like, no, because the contract is thicker than my jeans, and I wear thick jeans.
What I can say now about the film, and I have said this on social media, is 3/4 of this film is brilliant. Is fantastic.
No, I think that's fair.
It's great. The opening scene is phenomenal. Loads of great bits. Much like we were just talking with the Fast franchise, there are certain tick boxes that you need. It's exactly the same with Scream.
Yeah.
There are certain boxes you need ticked, and this ticks a lot of them. The huge problem that I have with this is the killer reveal. Not how it's done, by the way. How it's done is very good. It's who the killer is, which I'm still not going to say, just in case you haven't seen it. But that's where my problem lies. And there's a few other plot holes and other bits and pieces where, in my opinion, it falls down. It's still good. It's still very enjoyable. it's not as good as the last one, in my opinion. And that is only my opinion.
Okay, that's Scream 6. That's, I really liked it.
It's, yeah, it's,
but
good.
But I think it has a few, yeah, like you were saying about certain certain things you've highlighted there, I think pretty much on the nose. But yeah, I generally overall liked it. I love the directors. I love their stuff. I love,
yes,
Ready or Not. I love Scream,
yeah, really,
5.
Do.
Scream 5
really
is phenomenal.
Really do.
Scream 5, which I love a lot, is also on. In fact, they're all on there now. So Scream,
yes,
all,
no,
4 isn't.
4's not.
We're still missing 4. I think that's a Netflix thing. To do with Netflix, but no, yeah, no, so yeah. Scream 1-3 and 5 and 6 are all on Paramount Plus right now. Scream 4, of course, is still on Netflix, I believe. Oh no, I think they have added Scream 4 to Paramount Plus now. Not sure. Anyway, Paramount Plus is the place to go if you want to watch Scream 6. It's just been added, so check that out right now.
Coming to digital 4K Blu-ray and DVD is Knock at the Cabin.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of danced around this before.
I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it.
It's the ending. Again, it's almost at the ending with M. Night. I liked it. I think
I liked it enough to say that it was really good, but not great.
It's hard to describe any criticisms without spoiling anything. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, very good. I certainly enjoyed it more than some of Knight's previous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all Knight's work is great stuff. I'm a big fan of Knight's, but I would say that this is one of his stronger works.
Yeah, certainly in recent times. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Worth checking out.
And
Dave Bautista.
I was literally just about to say that. Dave Bautista is fantastic in this.
Just out of the park. Like, phenomenal. And, of course, Drax in Guardians.
Yeah.
He's,
what an amazing actor he's becoming.
Yeah, I mean, even in... Like, he's having a really good week.
Yeah.
Cause, you know, well, a couple of weeks, because Guardians is... He's phenomenal in Guardians as Drax. And his character goes through a real arc in this movie that's just beautiful. That, and then you combine that with Knock at the Cabin, which is, yeah, have a Dave Bautista double bill. Go and see Guardians at the cinema, and when you come home, get a takeaway and whack Knock at the Cabin.
Yeah.
That's on 4K Blu-ray, DVD, and digital right now. What did we rest on that? Can you remember?
I think, looking back, I'd probably give it a 3.5, I would say.
I think I was leaning towards a 4, wasn't I?
Yeah, so somewhere around there, yeah.
So, there you go. That's very good. That's a very good score.
And then out on the 22nd of May, so depending on when you're listening to this, if it's either immediately as we've dropped it or maybe a few days afterwards, it may or may not be out, but it's out on the 22nd of May.
Let's just say it's out now.
Is Little Bone Lodge, which is coming out on digital only.
Straight to digital. So this was directed by...
Matthias Hoen. We are the pod that gets the names wrong. And
we've lent into that
and,
now. Like, it's not a defence.
It's not a defence.
It's not a defence.
I will stand up for you, John, because 9 times out of 10, you're great. It's me, I'm useless. And I get names wrong quite a lot. So I think it's pronounced Hone.
Not everyone has to be cowboyed.
Right, okay.
We love you, Mark.
Do love Mark.
Yeah, so it's from director Matthias Hoen, who directed Cockneys versus Zombies, or Zombies versus Cockneys. I can never remember which.
The irony in what we just said, by the way, is that I said not everyone has to be Kermode, as in, so that's a reference to not everyone has to be as perfect as Kermode. The funny thing about that, he is so wonderfully humble that we would not consider himself perfect at all. He's very lovely like that. So yeah. What else we coming? Gomez like, but I'm not perfect by any measure. Well, as are none of us, to be honest.
No.
Let's be honest. We all make mistakes. It's just that we seem to have lent into this now.
A lot.
like it's a defensive blanket that's going to protect us from criticism. Of course it's not. And yes, it is mostly him.
So, yeah. True. So Little Bone Lodge, which is out on digital, is a little British indie film, which is the film that I was talking about earlier. It's set in a vicious storm in the Highlands of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's two criminal brothers that are on the run and they seek refuge at a desolate farmhouse. Now, they take the resident family captive. However, things don't go according to plan. And they find out that the house holds a dark secret of its own.
Thanks for helping.
You're safe now.
Police believe Michael McAllister Jr. along with brothers Jack and Matthew Vaughn may be headed north.
Oh,
police believe
off.
The men to be responsible.
Talking about
I didn't
you.
Do anything. I just need to...
You ain't gonna like what you've made me do now.
but you haven't given me a choice.
So this stars the fantastic Jolie Richardson.
Oh, she's great.
She is really, really great.
Yeah, and, she is.
Also stars Sadie Sovril, Harry Cadby, Cameron Jack as well. So a lot of English names that you may know of. And it also stars, and this is who we mentioned earlier, Neil Linpal, who not only stars in the film as one of the brothers, Jack, mm-hmm. but he also wrote the film as well.
Mm-hmm. Isn't Jolie Richardson Scottish? Ah, it's got you looking, isn't it? Or did she play someone Scottish in Loch Ness?
I do not know. I don't know.
Because she did play...
I don't...
She was in Loch Ness with Ted Hansen? Ted Danson. Yeah, the podcast gets people's names wrong.
She was born in London.
What was that?
So,
no, I'm messing with you. She was in Loch Ness with Ted Danson.
Oh, right, okay.
Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, that was a movie. Anyway, she was in The Blacklist recently. That's how
Jolie Richardson's great.
Yeah,
she's in loads and loads and loads.
She's been
of
in
stuff.
And out of The Blacklist. In recent seasons. Love that show.
This is a film which, again, there's a lot that I can't say because it's not built on spoilers and twists and turns, but that's a big part of it. So
it's a bit like a haunted house. You don't want to come out the other side and then tell everyone what happened when you went through.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But the one thing that you get literally from the start of this film is the fact that you know. People are hiding something. Something is not all as it seems.
I feel like that every time I walk in a room with you, to be honest.
and you spend a good hour of the film guessing what it is going to be. And when one spoiler is revealed, you know that that's not the only spoiler that's going to be revealed and twist. And then you know that something else is coming because literally until the final 20 minutes of the film, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Wait, is this a movie about being an Express FM?
Oh,
we kid. We're kidders. We kid.
That's very much an inside baseball joke, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Anywho.
But look, this film is great. This film, when we get sent films, we put them on. We've got no idea what we're watching, what we're looking at. We What? Why is it, what have I said?
I hope you put them on.
But what I'm getting at is, I don't know about you, but I try not to watch a trailer. I try not to read up too much. I try to not look at any other reviews. I just want to go into it with fresh eyes. So when I get sent something, I just put it on.
Yeah. And this is how our dynamic works, because obviously I work with I nearly walked into that. I obviously work in other areas of the film industry where I kind of see things all back to front and not, because films aren't made chronologically, of course, so I get to see quite a lot of stuff and work with a lot of trailers and things, so I tend to do that thing where I absorb all the spoilerific stuff because it doesn't really bother me, because it's just, you know, it's a day at work, so that you kind of go in clean and fresh
and then
your perspective interests me, because I'm like, okay, what does it look like from your eyes, because you get, I try and not sanitize things for you, but do you know what I mean? Like, I always, not a protective bubble, but I almost go, yeah, no, don't get anywhere near that because it's going to ruin this. Or like I said to you the other day, don't watch the final Fast X trailer because there's a lot of the movie in that.
Yeah.
So, you are the one out of the two of us that goes in completely clean slate, right?
And so when I watched this, again, Some things we get sent are absolutely brilliant, like this Little Bone Lodge. Some things that we get sent are okay, and then some things that we get sent are not great. And then this is just fantastic. And
that's a film business. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, that doesn't really work for a podcast either. If we were filming it, you would have got it, but yeah.
If we were filming it, people would be like, what's he doing with his hands?
But this is fantastic. This is so, so good.
This was so good that I don't think the second or third credit had hit and you were on the phone to me straight away going, oh my God, you need to see this movie.
So I never know where 3 Day Millionaire, I never know where that came out, whether it was late last year or early this year, because we spoke to the guys in January, I think.
We did. I think they were on a tour, weren't they? And then
I think it may have dropped late last year. So if that's the case, I would say that Little Bone Lodge and Rye Lane are the two British films for this year. That's how highly I rate this film.
Yeah, because obviously 3 Day... Well, I don't know. 3 Day found its wider audience through Netflix, thankfully. I hope it's the same for Little Bone Lodge, to be honest. I know it's on digital, which is great, but I think when it hits us, it's this is one of those films, as you've said before, that needs to be shouted about. And we're doing that right now, of course. But I think when you... It's digital download. That's one thing. But I think that if it finds its platform like Amazon Prime, yeah, perhaps, I know a lot of signature stuff goes there. You know, so that will be where it really finds its
So as we audience. Speak, it's doing the American film festivals at the moment.
Oh, that's great news. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's fab.
And it's getting all positive reviews, as it should do, because it really is absolutely amazing. I'm not sure how much I want to talk about this right now, because we have got an interview with the man himself, Mr. Neil Limbaugh.
Is there more information within said interview than you could possibly provide me right here?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's do that then. Let's move now to... we can come back on your final score on the other side, I think. Let's move. Let's get in the middle of this and say our big interview this week is with Neil Limbaugh, who is...
the writer and star of Little Bone Lodge.
If he touches my family, I'll kill you.
And I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Neil Limbaugh, the actor and writer of Little Bone Lodge. I've got to say, Neil, Little Bone Lodge is a phenomenal film. It is so, so good.
Oh, that's really, really kind of you, Paul. Thanks, thanks, first of all, for having me on your show and for the support of the film, for watching it, and for your kind words. I really appreciate it.
So I suppose the obvious place to start really is you are the writer and you play Jack as well. So did you have yourself in mind playing Jack when you wrote this?
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of a pretty much like the flag in the ground for me. I'd kind of... felt like from an acting perspective, I hadn't really sort of had the opportunity very often to sort of play the parts that had really interested me, or that I felt were maybe the kind of things I was best suited to do. And, you know, I sort of spent a bit of time perhaps, you know, on projects that didn't always feel that they were, you know, that they were quite right, and maybe not having such a great time. And then, you know, you start to be a bit more selective and say no to things. And after a while, if you do that enough times, then people stop asking you to do anything. I'd kind of found myself in this position where, like, the acting work had sort of started to plateau slightly. And I had found myself writing a lot more, and I was working kind of primarily in, you know, in sort of the commercial industry kind of writing. And it was, my wife was pregnant with our first kid, and this sort of alarm bell went off in my head, you know, that I was never going to go back to it, you know, that I hadn't really sort of seen it all the way through and given myself like the best opportunity, sort of put my best foot forward, so to speak. So I kind of knew that I had to double down and do something about that. So initially I made a short film, a 3-minute short film that was with just me in it. And it's sort of set in a prison. So we, me and my friend, who was a camera op, who'd worked on a lot of sort of big film and TV shows, but was looking to start shooting his own films as a DOP. We broke into this. We found ourselves in this old, in an undisclosed part of London. We managed to shoot this little short film, this sort of 3-minute short film in a couple of hours, and then sort of cut it together and put it into some film festivals, and just lucky, you know, people seemed to respond to it, and it won some little trinkets, and people kind of seemed to enjoy the film, and it gave me the encouragement to make another short, which I did again, very sort of similar thing, one man, you know, what kind of one character, one actor in sort of one location, again, kind of heightened genre type thing, and that sort of seemed to do quite well, and it was, we went into COVID, and went into lockdown in 2020, and a director that I knew, Matthias Hohner, who directed Little Bone Lodge, he reached out to me and sort of said, look, I've seen these couple of short films, they're both, you know, interesting and shot in one place with minimal sort of crew and cast. And I wondered, do you have any ideas on how you might make a feature that kind of exists in a not too dissimilar world? Because his reasoning being that when we come out of COVID, people would want to make films that were contained, that could be shot in a quick turnaround, on a sort of a COVID friendly kind of production, if you like. And he had a great in with a really sort of smart production company called T-Shop, who had worked with him on a previous film of his. So he sort of said to me, look, put some ideas together and we'll approach them. So I did. I kind of pitched them this this idea, which become Little Bone Lodge, which is sort of set on a farm with a handful of people. But the flag in the ground for me was that I was going to play the part of Jack, because I kind of felt like if I stepped away from it or allowed it to happen without me, I would have ended up sort of not seeing it through again, you know, kind of risking being sort of a might have been when I could make the film and maybe be a never was. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. So I had to find out, do you know what I mean? So that was the intention behind it, for sure.
So how was it working with Mateus, and how much of the film is a collaboration between the two of you, and how much was already on the page?
Well, I think, you know, like with any film, I mean, it has to be primarily about collaboration. You know, that's where the best work, thrives. As I say, like, you know, the idea I pitched him was what we then sort of put together a treatment, and we discussed it, and he was on board right from the very beginning. So from very early on, it felt like a project that we were both supporting and both kind of pushing to be in, you know, to be the best thing that it could be. And then even through the shoot, you know, we hired a cottage nearby the set and both stayed up there so that we were kind of talking throughout the process, and it felt like very much like we were trying to get on the same page in how to approach the film and approach the characters. So when we were in the edit as well, he was really, really generous in sharing sort of bits and pieces of the film and asking me to give feedback. And, you know, and as with any collaborator, he's going to take bits that he thinks that work for him and probably not other bits, you know, but it was great to be included in that process. And, you know, I think one of the main things I'd say about collaborating is that a lot of the time, although I wrote the script, a lot of the time people would then attribute it to being like your vision, right? And people would say to me on set, like, how does it feel to see your vision come to life? And the reality is, the minute that you go on this journey with people, it's not your vision anymore. It becomes a collective vision that is actualized by everybody on the production, from, you know, the actors right the way through to the production assistants. And I think you have to have that healthy attitude, because the minute that you cast other actors in those roles, I might have written the words, but they're going to populate that character with things that they're bringing to it themselves, their lived experiences and their ideas on how to portray that character, you know? So you have to be open and accepting of that. And that's what makes the films better. I think if anybody tried to hold on to every little piece, that would only be to the detriment of the project, you know, overall, I think.
You talk about your vision. When you literally at the start were sitting down to write this, some of the external shots of the film, I would call epic. They're unbelievable shots. So when you were literally sitting down to write this, did you envisage any of that, or did that all come later?
No, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, the very first line of the treatment, which then became the very first line of the script, was, you know, a vicious storm whips across the Scottish Islands. And I think it was so important to set up this sort of desolation and storm, because there's such key and integral parts of the story, you know, of the narrative, because ultimately you have to isolate these characters and you have to trap them in this house. And the storm does that, and the location does that too. So it was really, really important that we did that. And sort of talking about Mateus again, big props to him, because, you know, this is a small British film, and Mateus took himself out to Scotland with his drone and picked up a lot of the landscape stuff that we didn't have the budget to shoot during production, you know. So those things were always earmarked to be there, but how you go about getting them isn't always as straightforward as it might seem. But yeah, the locations were always there, I think.
Well, I mean, the tone is set really early doors, isn't it? It's alongside the huge storm, which obviously is sweeping across, you can tell that everybody is hiding something. And I love the contrast between outside with the beautiful scenery and the wide open space, and you see how isolated they are. But when the camera moves inside, it feels very, very claustrophobic.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that has to happen. You have to set that up, or the film ultimately doesn't work. You know, you have to have this sense of the house being a character in the film. And a point I started to make earlier, I didn't finish. So the short film, the very first short film I made with my friend, the DOP, he was also the DOP on Little Bone Lodge and the other short films that I've made. And the fact that we've been able to go sort of on this journey together from sitting in a pub one afternoon thinking that neither of our careers were quite where we wanted them to be and that we needed to do something about it, to then, you know, in a few years, having gotten to shoot a feature film that, you know, that we're both kind of doing the roles that we wanted to do in them, feels really rewarding. And it was Job that brought so much of that visual aesthetic to the film, you know, that created that look, you know, the contrast between the nature and the claustrophobia inside the house. So again, that speaks to the collaborative nature of filmmaking and whatnot. But, you know, all of those things that you're talking about come from the minds of lots of different people. And it's really rewarding when someone says that they think it's good. So thanks.
Well, I think, I mean, you talk about the house being an extra character in the film. I think some of the best films that we've seen over the years have that. I mean, obviously the hotel in The Shining springs to mind, but even something like The Plane in Con Air, which is literally the juxtaposition of that, because when they are confined in the plane, it feels incredibly claustrophobic and they can't get away from the current situation. Speaking of Nicolas Cage, I think the relationship between Jack and Matty reminded me just a little bit of Castor and Pollux Troy from Face Off. Now, maybe Jack isn't quite as smooth as Castor, but you can tell frequently that he moves between love for his brother and frustration of his brother as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really interesting reference, the Castor and Pollux Troy. When I was writing the film, I mean, that relationship wasn't one that was forefront of my mind, but it definitely does feel like it. You know, it's fitting. It's a fitting reference. I would say that what I was looking to do was kind of create that sort of reluctant codependency that the brothers have. You know, you've got this sort of more stereotypically kind of alpha character in Jack, who has this burden that's been put upon him to be responsible for his younger brother that he, you know, inevitably kind of follows around and sort of cleans up after and bemoans it, but really doesn't have tremendous amount of things in his life without it, you know. So there is this sort of sense that he needs Matty as much as Matty needs him, and they're both kind of lost without each other. I'd say that references that may have popped in, you know, that felt a little apt at the time, I don't know if it's sort of the first 25 minutes or so of From Dusk Till Dawn, that kind of relationship between those,
yeah.
or something maybe like Dead Man's Shoes or Good Time, where you have that sort of desperation that one has to sort of protect or look after the other, albeit without really wanting to have to do it.
I was just going to say, I think the rest of the cast as well. I mean, speaking of obviously Jack and Matty, Harry Cadbury is just phenomenal. Like, I think everybody is so great in this film. It's one of them films that you say they're going to go on to do great things. They're going to go on to do great things. They're going to go on to do great things. In fact, the only person that you probably couldn't say that about is Jolie Richardson, because she's already been and done the great things.
Yeah. No, we were so lucky, you know. It was to have Jolie on board, you know, from the get-go, just sort of was so, you know, so important in kind of setting the tone for what type of film we were looking to make. I don't think Jodie will mind me saying that she was reluctant initially, because it's a gamble for her. You know, she's, as you say, she's a legend, and she's done some incredible work. And to come and work on a small British film, that some of the stuff that happens in the film and some of the path that it takes is kind of dark, you know, and it's a risk. So for Jodie to be up for it, which she was 100% on set, you know, I know people sort of say these things out of a hat, but she's an absolute trooper. You know, when you see her in that film, that's her in the film, when she's taking those hits, when she's, you know, doing all of the physical stuff, that's Jolie. And she was 100% kind of committed to the role and to the part, and I don't think that we could have done it without her. And then you talk about the others, and Harry, who's got some massive things coming out this year, is going to be, you know, on everybody's radar. And Sadie, who it's just exceptional in the film. It's arguably the hardest part to play, and I think she's brilliant in it. And
yeah,
you know, extending beyond that, you know, with the likes of Roger and Clifford and Ewan, Cameron, Jamie, Sharon, we were just sort of blessed with such a great cast of actors that all turned up every day knowing their stuff, because it's the type of film, as you can imagine, on the budget that we're working on, the shooting schedule that we're working on, you had to be, if everybody wasn't ready to go, it was costing time and coverage, and everybody just really kind of nailed it, and it allowed the film to be made.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, the ensemble. I know a few awards ceremonies give awards out now to cast ensembles, but and as much as, you know, there are two or three main characters in this film, it is such an ensemble piece. I know it's quite a heavy and sort of semi-serious film. The one thing that put a smile on my face, actually, and I assume you intended this, a certain policeman was called PC Adams.
Right.
Which, of course, was your name in EastEnders.
Yeah, so...
Coincidence? So I think not.
I'm so glad you've asked me that, Paul. I don't think anybody else has picked that up. So, yeah, I mean, two things. So, one, going back to your very first question was, did you write the part, Jack, for yourself? Absolutely. And it was, you know, it was my line in the sand. But there is a reality that, you know, when you're financing films, it comes down to cast value. Would it have been easier to make this film with a bigger actor than me in that part? Absolutely. And could there have been a situation where producers turned around and said, well, look, mate, you know, you want to make this film, we can make it, but not with you, you know? And that was a reality that I had to face. And it was something I really was prepared to fall on my sword for. But then at the same time, if they turn around and say, look, we've got Chris Evans wants to do this, and we're going to set it in the States, and you know, all of a sudden your budget is X amount, I'd be remiss to not let the film happen. So I wrote in the part of Adams, knowing that.
Oh, yes.
Nice, juicy little part.
Brilliant.
And from a, you know, from just a banter perspective, I've always got this, watch this space, but if I get the chance to make another film that's in my head, I'd love the idea of playing, you know, of setting a character with a really big part with the name that you might expect to give an extra, like, you know, Man in Hat Crossing Bridge. but I just thought it was kind of a little in joke for me to know that this smaller character that I played elsewhere was living on in something else, you know?
Yes. Do you know what? So obviously you've got the Cornetto trilogy. I think that should be your thing, is no matter what film you make, there's a PC Adams in it. That would be just brilliant.
Yeah.
I love that. Kind of going back to the serious side now, was it really important for you to give Jack a human side, so to give a good side to the bad guy?
Yeah. I mean, for me, looking at it from a writing perspective, like, you're making a film that's all set in one place, right? And being aware of the fact that I had a pretty decent idea of what kind of budget I was going to be writing to. So it's, you know, having big set pieces or trying to be sort of really kind of complex in what happens narratively is not great. So you've got to be smart about keeping the film entertaining and complex. And that comes through characterization. I mean, the most interesting people that we know, they're three-dimensional. They're all three-dimensional, you know. And it's about trying to make sure all the characters felt rounded and real. And the goal and the aim was really to have the audience at any point in the film rooting for somebody else. So it shouldn't be so black and white that this is your protagonist, this is your antagonist. Ideally, there should be periods of the film where you're not really sure who you should be rooting for, or who you are rooting for is perhaps not who you were rooting for 10 minutes before. And I feel like if that doesn't happen, if there isn't some sort of sense of sympathy or an ability to like the character of Jack by the end of the film, then it doesn't really work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on with when you say about the three-dimensional people. There's one of my favourite lines in a Mr. Hudson song is, sometimes good men can do bad things just as bad men can do good. Tell me which way you like it.
I mean, that's exactly it. It's like, you know, in reality, not many people think they're the bad guy, right? Everybody can rationalize their decisions, or they're a product of their environment, or however you want to kind of analyze it. And I think that to play a character as sort of one note kind of detracts from what makes it really interesting. And I wanted there to be like a duality in all of the characters, where there were times where you just weren't really quite sure what to make of them, or they'd surprise you. And I think that's, you know, that's what I try to do with the film in general, is kind of keep the narrative as I say, because you are set in this one place, the intrigue and the interest comes from the character's behavior, right? So it's how do we kind of turn this film or twist this film as many different times as possible, keep the audience on their toes. So every time they think they've got it figured out as to who these people are or what they're doing, you kind of turn it again. The best films that I grew up with, you know, watching stuff like in the late 90s, things like The Game or The Usual Suspects.
Yeah, yeah.
Primal Fear, even the M. Night Shyamalan films, where there's that, you know, I didn't want the entire film to be sort of dependent on a rug pull, but this sense that you're not spoon feeding an audience something and you're making them, you're showing a lot of misdirection and then kind of trying to keep them surprised. And I think there's a couple of there are a couple of little like tricks up its sleeve, I think.
Well, I think the breadcrumbs throughout the film are par.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. And then there's a few other little bits in there. There's a few kind of little moments which hopefully, you know, if anybody is sort of happy enough to watch the film a second time with the knowledge of where it's going,
yes.
You'll see there are a few things that flag.
So you've got X, Pearl and Maxine, and I think this could be the next one.
Yeah. No, it's... I'm really appreciative of all of the positivity and support, certainly from yourself and from people that have seen the film and championed it so far. You know, it sounds like such a cliche thing to say, but a film like that can only happen when everybody who's involved in the film gives their heart to it and try, you know, and works above and beyond what they're paid to do, you know. And I think that we were very lucky to have the supportive producer that we had, like Mark Lane, was, you know, really great for us, and the team of talent that we had and the crew that we had, and I think that and the distribution company with Signature and everybody else that boarded the film to kind of get it out there in front of people. And you know, I hope that people like it.
I love it. I think it's amazing. It gets a 5 out of 5 from me. I think it's phenomenal. I will be telling everybody to go and watch this film because I rate it that highly. I think we're going to see one of these films where maybe in 10 years' time, everybody says, have you seen where this started?
Yeah. Oh, I'd love that. That would be amazing. Yeah. And I'm glad that you're getting to talk to the people of Portsmouth about it as well, you know, being from the South Coast myself. And
yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just along the sunny South Coast from Bournemouth.
That's right, yeah.
Neil, thank you so much for talking to me. I really appreciate it. I wish you all the success with the film. And fingers crossed we'll talk again for Little Bone Lodge 2.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it, mate.
All the best, mate. Cheers.
The fantastic Neil Linpal there, the star and writer of Little Bone Lodge, which is out as good as now.
As good as now.
As good as now on digital. And if we haven't sold it to you there, then I don't know how and why and what else we need to do. Because trust me, if you listen to our podcast for our recommendations and for our opinions on things, trust me on this one. Trust me. Go and purchase it digitally, and I assure you that you will absolutely love it. As stated in the interview, I think that this is going to be one of those films that in 4, 5, 6 years' time, when they've made another 2 or 3... and they'll go, ah, that's where they were in first. Little Bone Lodge was the film that came first, and then they have done.
Yeah, this is the movie X, you go back to. Right,
that's
right,
what I think
for
it's
sure.
Going to be.
Well, what are you resting on?
5.
Oh, it's a 5.
It's
Look
a 5
that.
Out of 5 without a shadow of a doubt. I thought
there
it was
we go.
Absolutely phenomenal. I couldn't think of a single thing about it that I didn't like. I thought the acting was phenomenal throughout. I thought the writing was brilliant. The direction, you name it, I thought it was fantastic. And it amazes me that it's a British independent movie. It really does.
There you go. Little Bone Lodge on digital now, or as good as. It's May 22nd.
May 22nd, yeah.
There we go. So as good as now, if you're listening now. Pre-order it, if not. Go and show it some love. It is definitely worthy of it. Little Bone Lodge is out now. Right.
Right, it's time to get to our Tip Top 5.
Oh, the big... I'm surprised. Now, normally you herald this. Normally when I say, oh, we've got this person on the show.
It's not as important as the Tip Top 5.
I guess the reason I haven't done that is because, like you said at the start of the pod, we have been so, so busy. And I did say that I was going to put this out to our listeners so that they could get involved. And time got away
from
me.
Well, no, because we literally kind of went, hey, we should probably do another one of these, and we just walked in and did it.
Yeah.
So if it sounds very rushed, this is why.
Time has got away from us.
We thought, we've had some lovely feedback, and we really appreciate that, but we've kind of understood as time's gone on that it's the content is important and what we do is important. I think that the people come for, you know, to find out our thoughts and opinions on things, but it's actually our the conversations between us themselves, which
strangely
are,
people seem well, to I like us, and I just why. Don't understand. But there you go.
I guess the drugs have got better these days.
So yeah. It is just going to be our top fives this week, and we promise.
Well,
you
yours.
That, okay,
we got as far as yours, I think.
And we promise you that we will get back on top of things and get you well, guys involved next week.
I don't know if I want to dip my toe into this because there are so many good racing movies. It's tip top five racing movies. So I think
in
what
honor
we're gonna
of Fast 10.
In honor of Fast 10. So here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna just adjust this slightly.
Are you calling an audible?
You can do top five racing films. I want you to be the pace car.
Oh, get God. In. Oh, God.
And I want you to be the leader of this race. I want you to be out in front. I want you to be in pole position.
Get to your point.
You do the top five, and then you've laid down the gauntlet right now. Because normally we do this before we record, yeah. Right? So it's not too late. I think what we should do is you should lead the charge with your top five, and it's up to me and everyone else to follow you over the next week online. So you do your tip top five, and then it's up to us to say whether we agree or don't agree and present our own. So me, myself, and I... And anyone listening to this right now and anyone that follows us online will be able to see your top five, and then it's up to them to rise to the challenge to bring their top five to the table between now and next week's pod. How do you like that as a plan? Given that way, because of the rush nature of which we put this one together, it would allow you to still do your top five. It allows the top five to stay in the podcast, right? But it also allow it. We haven't done anyone out of the opportunity to present their top five racing films either. How's
okay.
That sound?
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So you lead. Tip top five racing films from Paul Marsh. Ah. Oh.
Okay. So my number five is a Baby Driver, which.
What's that noise? I thought you'd put an effect in.
No,
for a minute.
No. I just. I knocked the microphone.
I was like, "Is he put the like?" Because I know some of Bri's music's on the desktop there. I was like, "Is he put fast music in with him?" Was like, that would be cool, but no.
So, number five is Baby Driver, which I know is technically not a racing film, but let's face it, the whole film is based on him as a getaway driver, and it's a driving film.
It's
so,
a car movie.
Yeah, so that's my number five. My number four, again, in line with Fast and Furious, is just a fun movie, and that's Death Race.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really like Death Race. Very, very funny. Very good. My number three is the original Fast and Furious.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I like that one. It's something about special about going back to that original. Something special about going back to that one. My number two is Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah, I saw it again the other night.
Yeah,
it's a great movie.
Really, really love it. Really
Mangold as well, the director of Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny.
So good, so good. And my number one is Rush.
Ooh. Good choice.
I really like that film. Really like that film. So that is Rush is my number one driving movie. We will put it out on our socials for you to follow suit and tell us what your top five driving movies are. Again, as always, at Need a Bigger Pod on all socials.
Yeah, if you found your way to the podcast via a post on socials and you're listening after clicking through said post to get here, then by all means comment there. We will put another post up separately once we've released the podcast though. So by all means, tell us your top five. I already know, I mean, off the top, I'm not ready with my five yet. I'm going to join our listener with this and come back to you over the course of
the week. Okay, I've got a question for you. How many of my top five do you think will make your top five?
I'm not sure, but I already know that Days of Thunder and Fast Five are going to be in mine.
Okay. I tried with...
So that's a little sneak preview.
So with Fast and Furious, I tried to keep it simple by putting the first one in there, which is more about the street racing, where later on it's not really about the street racing. It's more about the adventure of the film.
I still think Fast Five's my... Tokyo Drift.
So don't get me wrong. Oh, now that is a racing film. Okay, so I think Fast Five is a better film than Fast and Furious. But I think the original Fast and Furious is more race-orientated, if that makes sense.
And then Tokyo Drift.
yeah, Tokyo Drift is. I'm kind of kicking myself now that I've not put it in there, but there you go. It's done and dusted.
Tokyo Drift should be in there.
Yeah.
But that was Brian Tyler's first.
Was it? First Fast Score?
I mean, he's been involved actually from the beginning. I think he was. He tells this story better than I do. And do you know what? He will. Because he's coming back soon. So Brian Tyler's going to do an hour with Sean and I talking about the musical history of the Fast saga, his involvement in it. Yeah. Of course, he has scored the majority of the Fast movies, but also other composers have come in and out of that process over the however many films.
I don't even want to think about how many years it's been.
12 movies now, I think. Is there 11 or 12? Because there's 10 movies...
Yeah.
There's 11. So 10 movies and Hobson Shaw. So that's 11. There's 11 movies. Yeah, so Brian and Tyler have scored the majority of them. BT, the DJ, electronic producer, BT, is not Brian Tyler, by the way. That gets commonly confused because they've got the same initials. So BT, his first name is also Brian, scored the first movie. Very, very world famous electronic music pioneer and DJ and producer.
Again, it was a very different soundtrack electronic, than the first one. Yeah, I know a guy who's got a track in the first one, actually.
Do you? Is his name Ja Rule?
No. When somebody attacks Brian just as he's getting in his car. I think, is it Vince attacks Brian?
Watch your back! Watch your back!
That's it, yeah. Benny Cassette.
Benny Cassette, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, cool. And he comes back, like, he's got another track in the late, maybe six or five or
has
something.
Has he? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, yeah, so that was, so BT scored the first one, and then, of course, David Arnold scored Too Fast, Too Furious. And then it was mostly Brian. I think Lucas Vidal did six, although Brian did the themes for that. So yeah, and Tyler Bates did Hobbs and Shaw. So they're involved. He's kind of the overarching, I would say, patriarch. Is that the right word? The godfather of fast music. Anyway, so yeah, he is coming back to do an hour with us about the history of the fast music. So we will get more into which movie and how, and see if we can find out his favourite, because that's going to be a tough question to ask him, because he's got to love them all, right? This is lifeblood.
Yeah.
So, but we'll see. The Fast X score, though, I think is his career best. Of the franchise.
Okay.
Bearing in mind, this is the year he bought Super Mario Brothers, which by far and away, I think, is his best work. This year, he's been doing his best work.
He's had an okay year so far,
he's
hasn't
doing
he?
His, he's done he's all doing right. his
yeah,
best work.
But, Brian, yeah.
But he's a guy that raises his own bar.
Yeah,
he loves to raise his own bar, and he's doing that. Like his phenomenal work this year. So yeah, he'll be back. I'll be back to give you my top five.
Keep an eye on our socials.
But if you want to catch up on where Brian's at the moment, you can do that. There's an episode of Scoreheads about Super Mario Brothers, which is on this channel. You can get that right now. It gives us a little teaser into Fast X as well on there. But we'll get into the Fast saga with him in a couple weeks. Cool. All right,
that's us done.
We're good.
Yes. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to getting all the way to the end of this podcast.
I say all the way to the end. It's pod light, really, I think, in comparison to normally we're... That being said, we did do half an hour with Neil Limpow.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's kind of, I guess it kind of...
It's probably about the same.
Balanced out about the same, didn't it? Yeah, either or. No, but thank you. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone that has been involved. As always, it takes a village to make a podcast, so do check out our page on audioboom.com or from wherever you got this podcast. Do read the end credits, because, like I said, so many wonderful people that make sure that we get to do this every single week, of which we are very grateful. It's not just us two. There are so many other people involved, and we're very grateful to them, including ExpressFM Studios. Thank you to them for being our home. And also, yeah, Miles, Ian, Darren, Connor, and all the team there, and of course the View Cinema in Gunwolf Keys, who make sure that we have everything we need week on week from a cinematic theatrical release point of view. MyView.com to find your nearest view. Thank you to them as well. Thanks very much. Paul's literally already gone. Like, he's just gone. So I'm just sat here. It's just me and you. Thank you for listening. What should we talk about? I mean, it's just me and you now. So, do you have any questions for me? You can't ask me, can you? I can't hear you. Any questions at all? No. Right then. I think I'll go for a jog. You coming?